So we've been looking at The Mystery Revealed. Just as a little bit of a review, let's go to Ephesians chapter 3, where it plainly states what the mystery is, the mystery that was kept secret since the world began. And that secret that has been revealed is that the Gentiles should be fellow heirs and of the same body, and partakers of his promise in Christ by the gospel. Now, to really appreciate this and why it's such a huge deal, we need to have a little background of understanding of the relationship between God and the nations, and between the nation of Israel and the other nations, okay? So we did look at Genesis chapter 10, but I'd like to go back there once more. In Genesis 10, this is right after the flood, and it talks about Noah and his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and how they started repopulating the earth, because they were the only ones. It was four men and their wives, so there's four men, four women. They had eight human beings that were alive on the earth at this time. And it was their job to be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth, which they've done. I mean, at this point, we have close to 8 billion. So they've done a pretty good job. And it talks about the nations in light of the children of Noah and their descendants. So they have, again, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. In verse 2, it talks about the sons of Japheth. It mentions Gomer and Magog, which is mentioned several times throughout the Bible, as well as in the book of Revelation. And when you go down to verse 5, it says, "By these were the isles of the Gentiles divided in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families, in their nations." So the isles of the Gentiles, that would be like the colonies, the pockets of population that spread out from where they were. And they were divided by their lands, their geographic areas that they lived in, and after their tongue, the languages that they spoke. And then after their families, so the family relationships that they had, in their nations. So a nation is built up of an extended family that lives in the same area and speaks the same language, really, right? That would make up a nation as far as the way God tells us it is. So it talks about the nations that descended from Japheth, from Ham, and from Shem. When you look at verse 6, it says that these are the sons of Ham. And his children were Cush and Mizraim and Phut and Canaan. And these are significant names. Cush is, the word Cush is often translated Ethiopia or Ethiopian, okay? It's in part of Africa. So the Ethiopians, even to this day, are descendants of Cush, son of Ham, son of Noah. And then Mizraim, that name is usually translated Egypt. Sound familiar? So all the Egyptians were descendants of Mizraim. And that's what they called the area that they lived, was Mizraim. In the King James, it says Egypt. In our modern maps, it says Egypt. But the Hebrew word was Mizraim. And then you have Phut. And Phut was the Libyans. So they still have the nation of Libya to this day. They're descendants of Phut. And then Canaan. That's where we like to go camping, in Canaan's happy land, right? But Canaan was one of the sons of Ham that settled in the area that Israel later lived in. They took over the land of Canaan. And Canaan had a number of kids, like the Amorites and the Jebusites and the Girgashites, all those nations that are listed that lived in the land of Canaan that were taken over. Now, one of the descendants of Cush is called Nimrod. And it says he began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore, it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. I remember this in a Daffy Duck and Porky Pig cartoon. No, it was Daffy Duck and Elmer Fudd, because Elmer Fudd was a hunter. And Daffy Duck called him a Nimrod. And when I was a kid, I hadn't read this in the Bible. I just thought that meant like a numbskull or something like that. But he was calling him a mighty hunter. That's what Nimrod would mean. But the name Nimrod means rebellion. So Nimrod was not just a guy who liked to go out hunting. He was a rebellious one that rallied people to himself in defiance of God. I know if you look in the Companion Bible, Bullinger has a lot to say about him. And one of the places he quotes is the history that was written by Josephus in the first century called The Antiquity of the Jews. And he mentions Nimrod as one who exalted himself against God. And he convinced people that any prosperity that they enjoyed was not because of the goodness of God, it was because of their own efforts. So he rallied people really against God. And he shows up again in the next chapter. Go to chapter 11. Verse 1 says, "And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there." Shinar is later on called the land of Babylonia. "And they said one to another, 'Go to, let us make brick and burn them throughly.' And they had brick for stone, and slime they had for mortar. And they said, 'Go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth.'" They believed that they would be stronger if they stayed united rather than going out and colonizing different areas. "And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, 'Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do.'" So they're all unified under the leadership of this Nimrod, okay? This Nimrod, because it says that his kingdom, okay, yeah. I forgot to read chapter 10, verse 10. Go back to chapter 10 and look at verse 10. We read about Nimrod who said he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. And in verse 10, it says, "In the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, and Cana, in the land of Shinar." Okay? So the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. So who's leading the group to do this unified effort of making a city and a tower? It's Nimrod, the one who had exalted himself against God. So back in Genesis 11, in verse 5, "The Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, 'Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do.'" And that word imagined means they've purposed to do. And it's usually used in a bad sense, that someone's devising some kind of scheme or plot. "Go to, let us go down and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name called Babel, which means confusion by mixing. God mixed them all up there. "Because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth." So this gives an explanation of why the nations that we read about in chapter 10 were spread abroad, and they were divided after their tongues, in their lands, in their families, after their nations. See? There's several, like verse 31 of chapter 10. "These are the sons of Shem after their families, after their tongues, in the lands, after their nations." By the way, one of the sons of Shem, or I guess his grandson, was Eber in verse 25. It's mentioned in verse 24 and 25. "Arphaxad begat Selah, and Selah begat Eber. And unto Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days was the earth divided." And that may have had to do with the dividing of the nations at the Tower of Babel. But Eber is the father of all the Hebrews. Okay? So in his day and time, when the languages were mixed up, all those in Eber's family spoke Hebrew. Hebrew comes from Eber, okay? So Abraham, down the road, was a Hebrew, right? He spoke the Hebrew language along with others that were descendants of Eber. Now, back in chapter 11, it gives the exact number of years that, like, Arphaxad, who was born 2 years after the flood, and then he lived 5 and 30 years and begat Selah. It gives the number of years. One thing I learned when I was taking the class in chronology is that God will give the years like this when it's relating to the Christ line, because it's important, it's significant. When it's talking about other people that are not in the Christ line, he usually does not give the number of years because it just doesn't matter, right? He may give the names and the generations, but he doesn't give how many years they lived. But in this section, you can see how many years there were. And from the flood to the birth of Abraham, who you see towards the end of the chapter here, was 352 years. Okay, so Abraham was born 352 years after the flood. Noah lived 350 years after the flood. So Noah would have died just 2 years before Abraham was born. And Noah would have seen a lot of generations of people. Like, he would have had, like, great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren until, like, the ninth generation. So, must have been pretty cool. I wonder how often they would visit Noah, have a big family reunion with him. I don't know if they did it at all, but you think that would be kind of neat to go, let's go visit Noah, the guy who built the ark, because he was around for 350 years afterwards. Mm. Pretty cool. Mm. Now, the reason I am taking the time to look at this is because the mystery has to do with the Gentiles being fellow heirs and of the same body and partakers in the promise of Christ by the gospel, right? Who are they fellow heirs with? They're fellow heirs with the Jews, with the people of Israel. Now, Israel was a nation that came out of Abraham, right? So in chapter 12, verse 1, it says, "Now the Lord had said unto Abram," which was his name before it was changed to Abraham, "Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation." Okay, that's the same word for Gentile. I'm going to make of thee a great nation, a big extended family. "And I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee, Abram, shall all the families of the earth be blessed." Are you in a family? Then you're blessed in Abraham, right? Especially those of us that have believed in Jesus Christ, we are counted as children of Abraham, which is kind of cool. Now, out of Abraham actually came four nations. Remember, he had Ishmael before he had Isaac. And God told Ishmael that he would become a great nation. Actually said that to Hagar, Ishmael's mother. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make of him a great nation. He's going to give birth to 12 princes. And you can read the names of the princes of Ishmael. But he became a great nation, the Ishmaelites. Mm-hmm. Abraham also had other children after Sarah died. Let's look at Genesis 25. He married a lady named Keturah, and he took her to wife. And verse 2 says, "She bare him Zimran, and Jokshan, and Medan, and Midian, and Ishbak, and Shua." The Midians became a great nation that even dominated Israel at one point in the period of the Judges. They were children of Abraham, the Midianites. And I think there's a mention of Shua. In the book of Job, there was some guy that's called a Shuhite, because he was a descendant of the Shua. So he would have been a son of Abraham also, or great-great-great-grandson of Abraham. So anyway, there's these other nations that came out of Abraham. Also, he had Isaac, and out of Isaac came two nations, because he had Esau and Jacob, and the descendants of Esau were called the Edomites. So whenever you read about the Edomites in the Old Testament, and you read about them a lot, they are all the family of Esau. And then Jacob, of course, was given the name Israel by God. And from there you have the nation of Israel. Now, look at Exodus 19. God had special plans and desires for the nation of Israel, some of which came to pass in the Bible times and some that still have not yet come to pass, but they will, because if God says something's going to happen, well, it's going to happen. But in Exodus 19, verse 6, he said, "And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel." So God's design for Israel, that it would be a whole kingdom of priests. Now within the nation of Israel, you had one tribe that was separated out from all the others, and that was the tribe of Levi, the Levites. They were dedicated to the service of God. They were the ones that would set up the tabernacle, take it down again. It was their job. And the people would give their tithes to the Levites, and the Levites would live off the tithes of the people. Now, a subset of the tribe of Levi was the family of Aaron, Moses' brother. They were the high priests. So, to be a high priest, you had to be a son of Aaron. Under the law, that was the only way you could be a high priest, except for Jesus Christ was not a descendant of Aaron. He said he was a high priest after the order of Melchizedek, by a one-time special appointment. But among the people of Israel, in the tribe of Levi that was separated out, the family of Aaron was separated out to be the priests that would actually perform the sacrifices, burn the incense, and go to God on behalf of the people, you see. But then Israel as a nation was supposed to be functioning as a whole kingdom of priests to the rest of the nations, okay? So you have the whole human race divided in their nations according to geography, language, and families. One of these nations is nation of Israel, which was separated out from all the other nations. And they were to be a kingdom of priests to go to God on behalf of all the other nations, that the other nations would go to God through Israel. That was God's plan. And this was not the mystery, because God said it way back in Exodus, okay? It was just God's desire that he wanted all the people of the world to come to him through Israel. This will ultimately come to pass in the future after Jesus Christ returns following the gathering together. But in the meantime, there's a lot of other things that happened. Some good, some bad. But God had to deal with the people because they're people with free will. And that was God's limitation all the time, is that he had to deal with people that may or may not decide to obey what he said or cooperate with him. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. But if you go to 1 Kings chapter 11, it's important to understand the history of Israel because it's our history. Christ came from there. But in the history of Israel, they started out, with Jacob and his family. And so they went down to Egypt during that famine when Joseph was running it, and they multiplied in Egypt, and they came out with several million individuals. And God got them out of Egypt, or Mizraim, as they would call it, through the Red Sea, and then he wanted them to go into the Promised Land, but they refused to go at first. So it took 40 years for that generation to die out, and the next generation went in under Joshua, and they conquered the land bit by bit. There were some areas that they never got the people out of there, but they lived in the land, and God was considered their king, and they had judges that would rise up and help the people and bring them back to God. Until that there was an actual king. So there was one guy that declared himself to be king, but that didn't last too long because it wasn't one that God appointed. But God did appoint Saul to be king, and he reigned for 40 years. But then he rejected Saul because he didn't obey what God told him to do. So he replaced him with David. And he loved David. He was a man after his own heart. And he made promises to David that there would never fail a man in his family to sit on the throne. And David's son Solomon reigned after him. David reigned a total of 40 years. And then Solomon reigned a total of 40 years. And Solomon started out just doing great. He asked God for wisdom, and God gave him a wise and understanding heart, and he blessed him in so many ways. He prospered him. But when we get to 1 Kings 11, this is towards the end of Solomon's life, something heartbreaking happened. In 1 Kings 11, verse 1, it says, "But King Solomon loved many strange women." And that doesn't mean that they were just kooky, but they were from other countries, and they worshiped strange gods, you know. So he loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, and Hittites. So, you know, the Moabites, they were descendants of Lot, and the Ammonites were also descendants of Lot by his two daughters. The Edomites were descendants of Esau. The Zidonians, I don't remember where they come from, but they had their own kingdom of Zidon. And the Hittites, they were descendants of Canaan. And then verse 2 says, "Of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, ye shall not go into them, neither shall they come into you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love." Sure, he made some marriages for the purpose of diplomacy, you know, where you marry the daughter of the king of Egypt, now you have an alliance with them, your in-laws. But others, he just met these women and he fell in love with them and he married them, and then they wanted to worship their gods that they always worshipped. They didn't change their heart and decide to worship the God of Solomon and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They wanted to worship their gods that they were raised with, and they were false gods. Verse 3 says, "And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines." And those were women that they weren't considered actual wives, but he had sexual relationships with them. "And his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father." You know, David made some major mistakes in his life, and you can read about them because they're recorded in the Word of God, but he never worshipped any other gods. He never did. He either obeyed or he disobeyed God, but it was God that he's going to obey or disobey, right? And when he was reproved for disobeying God, like in the matter of Bathsheba and Uriah, he just turned right back to God. And God forgave him, even very serious things. But it was a big deal to God that David's heart was for God. Yeah, sure, he got messed up sometimes, but he got back up and went back to God every time. Solomon, on the other hand, towards the end of his life, it wasn't the same. Verse 5 says, "For Solomon went after Ashtoreth." He went after this other goddess, Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians. And he went after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. "And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and went not fully after the Lord as David his father. Then did Solomon build an high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the hill that is before Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. And likewise did he for all his strange wives." Because, you know, you do it for one, then they're all going to want their gods with the temples and altars. "So likewise did he for all his strange wives, which burnt incense and sacrificed unto their gods. And the Lord was very angry with Solomon, because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice. And he commanded concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods, but he kept not that which the Lord commanded him." So God reproved him, and he sent prophets to tell him, but he didn't listen to the prophets. All the wisdom that he had that he was so famous for, had now become very foolish. Verse 11, "Wherefore the Lord said unto Solomon, for as much as this is done of thee, and thou hast not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded thee, I will surely rend the kingdom from thee and give it to thy servant. Notwithstanding, in thy days I will not do it, for David thy father's sake, but I will rend it out of the hand of thy son." So God was even merciful to Solomon not to do this while he was still alive, but he said, "I'm gonna take the kingdom from your son. Howbeit, I will not rend away all the kingdom, but will give one tribe to thy son for David my servant's sake, and for Jerusalem's sake, which I have chosen. So, and then he talks about an adversary that was stirred up, but I want to skip down to verse 26. It says, "And Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephrathite of Zeredah," it means he was of the tribe of Ephraim, which is the largest tribe of Israel, okay, one of the sons of Joseph. "He was an Ephrathite of Zeredah, Solomon's servant, whose mother's name was Zeruah, a widow woman. Even he lifted up his hand against the king, and this was the cause that he lifted up his hand against the king. Solomon built Millo and repaired the breaches of the city of David, his father. And the man Jeroboam was a mighty man of valor. And Solomon, seeing the young man that he was industrious, he made him ruler over all the charge of the house of Joseph." So that would be the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, which was the vast majority of Israel. "And it came to pass at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem that the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite found him in the way, and he had clad himself with a new garment, and they two were alone in the field. And Ahijah caught the new garment that was on him and rent it," or ripped it, "in 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, 'Take thee 10 pieces. For thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and will give 10 tribes to thee. But he shall have one tribe for my servant David's sake and for Jerusalem's sake, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel.'" Now, you might say, well, the math doesn't work because 10 plus 1 is 11. But the tribe of Benjamin was such a small tribe because they had been whittled down after the big battle they had in the days of the judges. Benjamin stayed with Judah, but it was so small that it was hardly considered a full tribe. Okay. Verse 32 says, "Because they have forsaken me and have worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Milcom, the god of the children of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do that which is right in mine eyes, and to keep my statutes and my judgments as David his father. Howbeit, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him prince all the days of his life for David my servant's sake, whom I chose, because he kept my commandments and my statutes. But I will take the kingdom out of his son's hand, and will give it unto thee, even 10 tribes. And unto his son will I give one tribe, that David my servant may have a light alway before me in Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen to put my name there. And I will take thee, Jeroboam, and thou shalt reign according to all that thy soul desireth, and shalt be king over Israel. And it shall be, if thou wilt hearken unto all that I command thee, and wilt walk in my ways and do that is right in my sight, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as David my servant did, that I will be with thee, and build thee a sure house as I built for David, and will give Israel unto thee." That's a good solid promise from God, isn't it? "And I will for this afflict the seed of David, but not forever. Solomon sought therefore to kill Jeroboam," kind of like Saul tried to kill David. Again, Solomon wasn't in his right mind at this time. "And Jeroboam arose and fled into Egypt unto Shishak, king of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon." Now, let's skip down to chapter 12. After Solomon died, he had a son named Rehoboam. Okay? Rehoboam. Verse 1, "And Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel was come to Shechem to make him king." Why? Because Solomon was dead. "And it came to pass when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who was yet in Egypt, heard of it," for he was fled from the presence of King Solomon, and Jeroboam dwelt in Egypt, "that he sent and called him. And Jeroboam and all the congregation came and spake unto Rehoboam, saying, 'Thy father made our yoke grievous. Now therefore make thou the grievous service of thy father and his heavy yoke which he put upon us lighter, and we will serve thee.'" Said, "Yeah, your father, the taxes are high, there's a lot that he required of us. Give us a break, make it easier for us, and we will serve you." And it's Jeroboam is speaking for all the people and saying, "Do this, we will serve thee if you do this." "And he said unto them, 'Depart yet for 3 days, and then come again to me.' And the people departed. And King Rehoboam consulted with the old men that stood before Solomon, his father, while he yet lived, and said, How do you advise that I may answer this people? And they spake unto him, saying, If thou wilt be a servant unto this people this day, and wilt serve them, that's what a king is supposed to do, right? Mm-hmm. Remember what Jesus Christ said? If you will serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, then they will be thy servants forever. But he forsook the counsel of the old men which they had given him, and consulted with the young men that were grown up with him, which stood before him. And he said unto them, What counsel give ye, that I may answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, Make the yoke which thy father did put upon us lighter? And the young men that were grown up with him spake unto him, saying, Thus shalt thou speak unto this people that spake unto thee, saying, Thy father made our yoke heavy, but make thou it lighter unto us. Thus shalt thou say unto them, My little finger shall be thicker than my father's loins. So you'd show them who's boss. You think it was bad with my father. No, you ain't seen nothing yet. And now, whereas my father did lade you with a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father hath chastised you with whips, I will chastise you with scorpions. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day as the king appointed, saying, Come to me again the third day. And the king answered the people roughly and forsook the old men's counsel that they gave him, and spake to them after the counsel of the young men, saying, My father made your yoke heavy, and I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, and I will chastise you with scorpions. Wherefore the king hearkened not unto the people, for the cause was from the Lord, that he might perform his saying, which the Lord spake by Ahijah the Shilonite unto Jeroboam the son of Nebat. So when all Israel saw that the king hearkened not unto them, the people answered the king, saying, What portion have we in David? Neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now see to thine own house, David. So Israel departed unto their tents. But as for the children of Israel, which dwelt in the cities of Judah, Rehoboam reigned over them, okay, of the tribe of Judah. Then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was over the tribute, and all Israel stoned him with stones. He sent the guy up to collect the taxes from the northern tribes, okay, he was over the tribute. And they stoned him. They said, We're not going to pay taxes to you. Rehoboam's not our king anymore. Didn't you hear what we said? They stoned him with stones that he died. Therefore King Rehoboam made speed to get him up to his chariot to flee to Jerusalem. So Israel rebelled against the house of David unto this day. And it came to the pass when all Israel heard that Jeroboam was come again, that they sent and called him unto the congregation and made him king over all Israel. And there was none that followed the house of David but the tribe of Judah only. Also the remnant of the tribe of Benjamin did. So there is this conflict there between Rehoboam over Judah, and it's going to be called the Kingdom of Judah going forward. And Jeroboam's kingdom, the northern ten tribes, is called the Kingdom of Israel. Okay? Now, the thing that happened with Jeroboam, he could have done a great job, but he got afraid. Look at verse 26. He said, Jeroboam said in his heart, Now shall the kingdom return to the house of David. He forgot the promise God made to him. But he's saying this in his heart. If this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Wherefore the king took counsel and made two calves of gold and said unto them, It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Sound familiar? Sounds what they did when Moses was up on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights, right? Except he made two golden calves. And he said, These are the gods which brought you out of the land of Egypt. And he set one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. And this thing became a sin. For the people went to worship before the one, even unto Dan. And he made an house of high places, and made priests of the lowest of the people, which were not of the sons of Levi. So not even of the family of Aaron, but not even in the tribe of Levi. He just took anybody and made him a priest, where these golden calves were. And Jeroboam ordained a feast in the eighth month, on the 15th day of the month, like unto the feast that it is in Judah. And he offered upon the altar, so did he in Bethel, sacrificing unto the calves that he had made, and he placed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. So he offered upon the altar which he had made in Bethel the 15th day of the 8th month, even in the month which he devised of his own heart, and ordained a feast unto the children of Israel, and he offered upon the altar and burnt incense. He could have been a great king. He was appointed by God. The prophet told him, I'm giving you the 10 tribes. And if you follow God's word, he'll make you a sure house and your family will be king forever. But because he did that, God had to get rid of him. The king that replaced him obeyed God in getting rid of Jeroboam, but he continued doing the same things that Jeroboam had done. And then there was another king that had to replace him, and another one that replaced them. And then they started getting worse. So you have King Ahab, who married Jezebel, who was from where the Sidonians were, and they brought Baal worship into Israel. And it just got to the point where God couldn't stand it anymore. Look at 2 Kings 17. This might seem like I'm off on a big tangent, but there's a reason for me sharing this with you. It will make some of the things that we cover in the next sessions, it will make more sense when you understand all this. Some of you already do, but even if you do, it's good to review this. So 2 Kings 17, we're going to start in verse 5, and I'm just going to read through this. But listen good. And this is hundreds of years later now, okay? It says, then the king of Assyria came up throughout all the land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years. Samaria was the capital city of the northern kingdom of Israel, okay? So he besieged it. In the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria took Samaria. So Hoshea was the king of Israel. In the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria took Samaria and carried Israel away into Assyria and placed them in Hela and in Habor by the river of Gozan and in the cities of the Medes. For so it was that the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, which had brought them out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and had feared other gods, and walked in the statutes of the heathen, that's the Gentiles, the nations, whom the Lord cast out from before the children of Israel, and of the kings of Israel which they had made. And the children of Israel did secretly those things that were not right against the Lord their God, and they built them high places in all their cities, from the tower of the watchman to the fenced city, and they set them up images and groves in every high hill and under every green tree, and there they burnt incense in all the high places, as did the heathen, or the nations, whom the Lord carried away before them, and wrought wicked things to provoke the Lord to anger. For they served idols, whereof the Lord had said unto them, ye shall not do this thing. Yet the Lord testified against Israel and against Judah by all the prophets and by all the seers, saying, turn ye from your evil ways, and keep my commandments and my statutes, according to all the law which I commanded your fathers, and which I sent to you by my servants the prophets. Notwithstanding, they would not hear, but hardened their necks, like to the neck of their fathers that did not believe the Lord their God. And they rejected his statutes, and his covenant that he had made with their fathers, and his testimonies which he testified against them. And they followed vanity, and became vain, and went after the heathen, the nations that were round about them, concerning whom the Lord had charged them that they should not do like them. And they left all the commandments of the Lord their God, and made them molten images, even two calves. Remember, Jeroboam did that. And made a grove, and worshipped all the host of heaven, and served Baal. It was Ahab and Jezebel that did that. And they caused their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire, and used divination and enchantments, and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. And Judah kept not the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the statutes of Israel which they made. And the Lord rejected all the seed of Israel and afflicted them and delivered them into the hand of spoilers, until he had cast them out of his sight. And he rent Israel from the house of David, And they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king, and Jeroboam drave Israel from following the Lord and made them sin, a great sin. For the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They departed not from them. Even when they got rid of the Baal worship, they still worshiped those two golden calves that Jeroboam had set up. Until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said by all his servants the prophets, so was Israel carried away out of their own land to Assyria unto this day. And the king of Assyria brought men from Babylon, and from Cuthah, and from Ava, and from Hamath, and from Sepharvaim, and placed them in the cities of Samaria instead of the children of Israel. And they possessed Samaria and dwelt in the cities thereof. So hundreds of years later, Jesus and the apostles go to Samaria. Who's living there? The descendants of these foreigners. Okay, that's why the Judeans despised the Samaritans, because they weren't really of Israel. But here's what happened. And so it was at the beginning of their dwelling there that they feared not the Lord, had no respect for Jehovah. Therefore the Lord sent lions among them, which slew some of them. Wherefore they spake to the king of Assyria, saying, the nations which thou hast removed and placed in the cities of Samaria know not the manner of the God of the land. Therefore he has sent lions among them, and behold, they slay them, because they know not the manner of the God of the land. Little they know, he's the God of all the land. But they just consider him the God of this little area. Then the king of Assyria commanded, saying, carry thither one of the priests whom ye brought from thence, and let them go and dwell there, and let him teach them the manner of the God of the land. Then one of the priests whom they had carried away from Samaria came and dwelt in Bethel, and taught them how they should fear the Lord. Howbeit every nation made gods of their own, and put them in the houses of the high places which the Samaritans had made, every nation in their cities wherein they dwelt. And the men of Babylon made Succoth-ben-no, the men of Cuth made Nergal, and the men of Hamath made Ashima, and the Avites made Zibhaz and Tartak, and the Sepharvites burnt their children in fire to Adrammelech and Anammelech, the gods of Sepharvaim. So they feared the Lord, and made unto themselves of the lowest of them priests of the high places, which sacrificed for them in the house of the high places. They feared the Lord and served their own gods, after the manner of the nations whom they carried away from thence. Unto this day they do after the former manners. They fear not the Lord, neither do they do after their statutes, or after their ordinances, or after the law and commandment which the Lord commanded the children of Jacob, whom he named Israel, with whom the Lord had made a covenant, and charged them, saying, ye shall not fear other gods, nor bow yourselves to them, nor serve them, nor sacrifice to them. But the Lord who brought you up out of the land of Egypt with great power and a stretched out arm, him shall ye fear, and him shall ye worship, and to him shall ye do service. And the statutes and the ordinances of the law and the commandment which he wrote for you, ye shall observe to do for evermore. Ye shall not fear other gods. And the commandment that I have made with you, ye shall not forget. Neither shall you fear other gods. But the Lord your God ye shall fear, and he shall deliver you out of the hand of your enemies. Howbeit, they did not hearken, but they did after their former manner. So these nations feared the Lord and served their graven images, both their children and their children's children, as did their fathers, so do they unto this day. So at this point, Israel as a nation, they're scattered throughout the Assyrian Empire, which is later going to be taken over by the Babylonians, which will later be taken over by the Persians and the Medes, and later be taken over by the Greeks, and later by the Romans. Okay? So it's important to know this in light of things that Jesus Christ will say and do in the Gospels, and we're going to look at that next week. Okay? Because it's 8:30 now, and we have to stop. But remember these things that we read together, and we'll look at a little bit more, but we'll see some things that will help you understand the statements of Jesus Christ that might be mistaken for him spilling the beans about the mystery, okay? Jesus Christ did not say anything that revealed the mystery, because it could not be revealed until after he was raised from the dead. But knowing this background, some of those things will make more sense to you now. So, I'll close with prayer. Dear God, we're so thankful to you that you are the one and only God. And any other gods that anybody chooses to worship, whether they did it centuries ago or they're still doing it now, we know that those gods mean nothing. But the people that worship those gods, they're just blind. And we pray for them that their hearts can turn to you. But we're so glad to know you as the only true God, and your Son is the only way to know you as our Father. So we're thankful to be saved by you, thankful to be part of the body of Christ. And my prayer is for these wonderful saints who are listening in, that when we're done looking at all this, that they have just a tremendous appreciation for what you have done, for the great secret that you kept secret, why you kept it secret, why you revealed it when you did, and what it means to us, and how wonderful it is. So we're just in the starting to get into the thick of it now, God, but I pray that the light bulb goes on in everybody's heart and mind, and that we all just really get it and have such thankful hearts when we see it all unfold before our eyes from your word. So we thank you, dear God, in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.